Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard seltzer beverage company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
To Starting Nine, episode 282.
Oh man, it's a
postseason has begun. The wild card round has wrapped, Dallas, and your boy went 2 for 2 with his picks. Dallas 1 for 2. Sorry to say it, the Redbird season is over.
So, somebody had to go out on that limb like a red bird. So I didn't pick the team with 106 wins.
No one's sitting here saying like, I can't believe you made that pick. I mean, they won 17 games down the stretch. Hell of a run by the St. Louis Cardinals. It was a hell of a ball game. 1-1.
Incredible.
Then you had the Chris
game.
Taylor walk off 2-run bomb in the bottom of the ninth inning. I think, you know, Chris Taylor had obviously been scuffing a little bit, but having the machine, Albert Pujols, at the dish in the bottom of the ninth of a 1-1 ball game with a chance to walk off the St. Louis Cardinals as a Dodger. That's theater.
Well, they did. The Dodgers took 16 position players into that game. 26 players on the roster, 16 of them were position players. And that is for the depth purposes. So you saw Dave Roberts very quickly make that move when they announced Gavin Lux. Cardinals roll out TJ McFarland. Dave Martinez says, oh, contraire, I've got a fucking Hall of Famer on the bench here that I'll just bring up there to counter that move as well. So Dave Roberts countered the pitching move and brought Albert Pujols. That just speaks to the depth, right? Mm-hmm. If you've got a guy like Chris Taylor that you can plug in even later in the ballgame, and that's what happens, that's all part of the Dodger depth that has been talked about ad nauseum. Why this team is good. Why this team is nothing to be trifled with come the postseason. Really, why they're nothing to be trifled with during the regular season. Except for when you got a 107-win team in the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, and we'll get there. We'll get there. But for right now, the St. Louis Cardinals, the magical run has come to an end. And I'm sure there are a lot of fans of teams with their teams still in the postseason saying thank you to the Dodgers. Imagine that. The Dodgers are defending World Series champions, 106 wins, and there are a lot of fans that are relieved that they ended the Cardinals season, because that's a team that you just don't want to see not get hot, but stay hot in the month of October, because they were more than capable of doing what they did in September again in October, all the way to the Fall Classic. So St. Louis Cardinals are out. The Dodgers are moving on. You're going to see Dodgers Giants, which is going to be an electric series. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. The Boston Red Sox, Dallas. The Boston Red Sox, I guess a big thank you to the Tampa Bay Rays, really, because people forget the Yankees had a 2-game lead going into the last weekend of the season at home against the Rays, who had nothing to play for. They already had the best record in the league locked up. They already had the division clinched. They had nothing to play for. The Yankees could control their destiny, and they lose 2 out of 3. They have the walk-off on game 162, 1-0 Aaron Judge. And by the way, I was getting old takes exposed because I said Aaron Judge never had a clutch hit in his life. And what I meant by that is he had zero walk-off hits in his career. That was his first walk-off hit in his career. The ball did not make it to the dirt of the infield. And if there were two outs, it's a ground out. So
still a walk-off.
Yeah, if there were two outs, it's a ground out. So the Yankees have to go to Fenway for the wild card game because Tampa just played them tough. Credit to them for having the integrity to play them tough so that they had to earn it. And what they did was earn a trip to Fenway Park, where Gerrit Cole took the mound. And I would like to hear your opinion on this, because obviously people are going to say that I'm biased, and I feel like I'm not, and there's logic behind this take. I said that that was the biggest start of Gerrit Cole's career. And when I said that, you had Yankee fans and Astros fans alike coming at me saying, you do know that he pitched two games in the World Series, right? No, I do know that. I do know that he pitched two games in the World Series, but I also know that there was an individual in Houston at the time by the name of Justin Verlander, who was the guy. He was the guy. Gerrit Cole was not the guy. Gerrit Cole did not have $324 million. He wasn't the richest pitcher in baseball history at the time. He wasn't the number one. Justin Verlander was. So Gerrit Cole gets paid by the Yankees, and this is the game. Like, he pitched in the postseason last year against the Tampa Bay Rays. He pitched in the clincher that the Yankees lost, and these were in empty stadiums. This was the first time, as the richest pitcher in baseball history for the New York Yankees, in a hostile environment, in a do or die must win game against the Yankees' greatest all-time rival, and Gerrit Cole laid one of the biggest stinkers of his entire baseball life. Six outs, two plus innings. That was it. Yankees lose the ball game. And I would love to know how you feel about that stance, that that was the biggest start of his career.
I think the narrative around it creates the idea that that's the biggest start of his career, because you're factoring in the money, and you yourself and anybody that is analyzed as a New York Yankee, I think, already starts to lean towards, well, what's he going to do against the Red Sox? And this scenario here, because of the Red Sox-Yankee rivalry, could lend itself to the notion that this is the biggest start of his career, because it is about eliminating your rival. And essentially, you have the belief that, why was this guy pursued to the extent he was if his name was getting kicked around in all kinds of camps? Well, it's partly because you know this is a guy that can get you over the hump, or you believe that. And it also means that your opponents don't have this dude. And just naturally, that means this guy has to be pitching in those big games against those rivals. So you spend that money on that dude? Yeah, he's got to win these ball games. But the idea that that's the biggest game of his career, to those people who are tweeting you's point, he has made starts in the World Series. So the idea that he, as the highest paid Yankee hired gun against
highest
the Red
paid
Sox,
pitcher in baseball history.
Sure. Sure. But that doesn't mean that this is the biggest start of his career. It means that in the pantheon of Red Sox Yankee rivalryhood, then yes, this is the biggest start of his Yankee career. The biggest start of his Yankee career, no doubt. And the legacy that people are talking about, I think they inherently almost like just subconsciously cut out him as a world champion outside of.
Well, he didn't win it.
That's what I mean. Like, him as a world champion outside of being a Yankee, like, that hasn't happened. So the legacy is now geared towards, what's he doing as a Yankee?
Yeah, I still think it was the biggest start of his career. I think it was the biggest start of his career because, like I said, those factors, you weren't the guy. You were a guy, no doubt, one of the biggest guys. You weren't the guy in Houston.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean
the guy in New York. That's why you were brought there. You were brought there for that game.
Jared, that's like saying a number two, like, well, give me a guy on the Eddie, Eduardo Rodriguez. Like, he doesn't start game one of the World Series. Does that
what about like the Dodgers? Like when they brought in Trevor Bauer. Was he the guy? No, he just won a Cy Young Award. But was he the guy? Clayton Kershaw was still there. He's the guy. Walker Buehler was already there. He's another guy.
And if Trevor Bauer has made, if any of those people, like what I'm getting at is, if you're making a World Series start, like you're starting in a World Championship Series, I don't give a shit where you are in the rotation on opening day. I don't care about that. That start in the World Series, probably the biggest start of your career. It's not even really a question. Like everything getting to that point, like as pitchers, you think about this is the mentality. What's the most important start in your career? The next one. That's always the question, or that's always the answer. The next one. My most important start in my career is the next one. But if you're looking back, the most important start in Garrett Cole's career was the last World Series start he made. And now here as a Yankee, it's to get his team to the postseason through a rivalry based on the fact that he was paid that much. He should be winning those ball games against the rivalry, against anybody.
So that's it. Yankee season's over. Giancarlo Stanton, another standout postseason, even though it was very short-lived. I mean, the dude should have had three homers. He still ended up with one, but he should have had three. Poor John Sterling.
Well, if you just close your eyes and listen to the game, he did.
There were people that probably drove their cars off the road listening to that broadcast, that they totaled their cars for a fucking single, which is a travesty. It really is.
Man, I mean, that game, like, I obviously didn't hear that call right away, like live. I was watching the regular ESPN broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a while to get over to the ESPN2 broadcast. But it just like, yeah, it was something weird, maybe something in the air.
What did I do wrong? He says, well, there's a lot of people that did things wrong. You know, poor Phil Nevin at third base, Aaron Judge getting cut down. Like that was really the pivotal moment of the game. I mean, obviously Xander Bogaerts hitting the 2-run homer, Schwarber hitting the solo shot to make 3-0.
This is what people need to understand about that play. And that's why I tweeted that play specifically. And I can already tell you that I reached out to multiple third base coaches. And that's something that you are always taking into consideration, which was what I was talking about, which was who is backing up? Are they going to field this ball cleanly? What do their transfers look like in the outfield? Like, that's all video work that's getting done. Those are scouting reports. That's advanced scouting that's getting done by your coaching staff and by your scouts. So Kike making that play, backing up, the idea that you should be backing up, yeah, that's standard, right? You expect a big leaguer to find a place to be backing somebody up, especially in that scenario. The idea that he was backing up and was in the spot he was in as quickly as he was in it, and if you watch him make that relay throw, he doesn't gather the ball and like double clutch. He doesn't take any extra steps. There's no wasted movement from the time he gets to the ball to the time he lets that ball go. And he throws the piss out of it all in one fluid motion, gets it to Xander, who makes a great throw himself.
Which is interesting.
And gets that ball in. So from Nevin's point of view, he sees that ball carry him off the wall. And he sees Judge coming around, and he sees Kike running towards that ball. In Phil Nevin's mind, he's thinking, I don't know that Kike is going to, one, field this thing cleanly and fluidly and be able to get a strong, accurate throw into the cutoff man, and then have that guy also make a strong, accurate throw to gun this dude down. So Phil Nevin's thinking, they're going to have to play catch right now. Going to have to happen. So it's a combination of Judge probably losing a step around third base and Kike Hernandez making a great heads up play, but a fluid and efficiently fluid play from the outfield. There's a reason, again, I tell people to get to the ballpark early and watch people put their work in beforehand. You'll watch outfielders take balls off of the outfield wall and try not like turn a double play, but throwing from different arm slots, so as to be able to try to keep a runner who might be on first base trying to score with two outs on a double off the wall, trying to keep that dude at third base because they're getting the ball in just that much quicker. That's the difference between a guy holding up at third base and getting the wave like Nevin may have given. And Aaron Judge, he gone. Hosed.
He is gone. So are the Dark and Stormies that I've been drinking before this podcast recording. And we're sponsored by Gosling's Rum, the creator of the Dark and Stormy cocktail. It's fall. The leaves are falling and the cocktails are up. And our friends at Gosling's are bringing back their limited edition pumpkin spice Dark and Stormy Dallas.
Stop it right now,
God.
Jared.
I swear to God.
My basic bitch meter just went off the fucking rail right.
Have you ever had one of these? It's a sweet and spicy remix of the classic Dark and Stormy. Buddy. And here's the kicker. It's only available until Halloween, October 31st. So you got to get it before it's gone. You can order your pumpkin spice Dark and Stormy at cocktailcourier.com.
They better come up off it, Carabas. I want a fucking pumpkin spice Dark and Stormy. I will mainline that shit.
So here's the deal. Little Birdie told me that I think I'm kind of off the hook for streams unless it's Red Sox, White Sox, and the ALCS. If it's Red Sox, White Sox, and the ALCS, we're going to have to get you over here, and we can just sit in the back row. White Sox Dave's going to be in the front row. We can just be sucking down some pumpkin spice Dark and Stormies. But if you don't want to wait until the stream, cocktailcourier.com, you can get 30% off using the promo code Barstool. So again, that is cocktailcourier.com. Receive 30% off with the promo code Barstool. So I'm looking forward to that stream if it happens. But before that can happen, the Red Sox are going to have to advance past the Tampa Bay Rays. But let's hold off on ALDS talk for a second. This Red Sox-Yankees wild card game, it didn't, to you as a unbiased third party, no dog in the fight type deal besides picking the Red Sox, which was very smart of you to do. Did you ever feel for a single second like the Red Sox were in jeopardy of losing the ballgame?
No, not after Xander came up and did what I told you he was going to do, which was come up and get a big hit. Come up and just say, fuck it. You know who I am? Like, I'm Xander. This is the kind of shit that I do. Don't worry about what the whole entire season is postseason. It's postseason. It's bonus baseball, baby. Now what's Xander do? Boom. 2-0. Fuck your face. Real
straight
early.
Straight away. Dead center.
Real early. And that right there, like, it's almost like I could see the air being taken out of all of the tires. Just in real time. That first quick blow. Boom. From there, it never felt like, I mean, because dude, they were offensively the Red Sox and having an understanding of what their approach was. I'm going to make you throw it for strikes and we're not swinging at that shit. Not late. We're not chasing that shit. Not going to happen. Gerrit Cole wasn't getting the call on the fastball and the call on the slider about an inch off the plate. Maybe like he has in the past. And he made the adjustment early a little and came back in the zone with it, but just was never able to get the Red Sox to expand their strike zone the way he wanted to early on. And he didn't get a ton of swing and miss on the fastball either, the way you typically see Gerrit Cole get swing and miss on the fastball early. So much so, Jared, that I actually took the liberty of taking a look at some numbers.
Oh, please do share.
Gerrit Cole threw 23 fastballs and he had 5 swing and misses.
Mm-hmm.
5 swing and misses on the fastball. That's just not Gerrit Cole-esque. He threw 15 sliders, 3 swing and miss, 10 for strikes, but 3 were swing and miss. Not he just wasn't generating the deception, just wasn't happening for him. And that showed a disciplined approach from a Red Sox team who, like I said, in my mind, clearly had a plan and was like, we're not going to do that. Because if we do that, this dude becomes damn near unhittable. Can't do it. And Garrett Cole looked like it flattened out early.
Well, with the you know, you mentioned approach. The Yankees' approach was terrible. I mean, you had Nathan Eovaldi out there, who the Yankees hung a big-time crooked number again. I think it was 2 2/3 and 7 runs his last time out at Fenway, which was just 2 weeks ago. And you're watching Nathan Eovaldi go to work against some of these Yankee hitters, and they're trying to jump on first pitch fastball. And Nathan Eovaldi is generating the weakest of weak contact to literally everyone except for Giancarlo Stanton. Stanton was dangerous all night, but outside of that, no hard contact anywhere.
Jared, it was about like the best pitch in baseball. What's the best pitch in baseball, Jared?
Strike one.
And what's the second best pitch in baseball?
Strike two.
Fucking changeup. But strike two is a close second. Yeah. The best pitch in baseball is strike one. Any idea how Eovaldi did in that category? I do.
How many first pitch strikes did he throw, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Eight?
Take a guess. Eight? Jared, he was 16 for 20.
Wow.
16 for 20 first pitch strikes. Filling it up early and often. Okay? Just for comparison, Eovaldi threw 35 fastballs, like four-seam fastballs. 29 of those went for strikes. He got 6 swing and misses. All right. Remember, Garrett Cole threw 23, got 5 swing and misses. So Eovaldi threw more fastballs, obviously went a little deeper. But the weak contact, and that comes from getting ahead of guys, because from there, you start to look at the secondary stuff and what do those numbers look like? Because if you're ahead with strike one and you're forcing the issue with the fastball, well, in my mind, you're going to be able to open up the secondary stuff for my sake later. And you just got to throw for strikes, which is what Eovaldi did. Threw 13 curveballs, 11 of those for strikes.
That was his weapon in September, where his curveball usage almost doubled, and he was seeing great results with that. So that was obviously a trend that continued in this start against the Yankees. I figured, you know, you're going to look at what you did entirely in that last start against New York at Fenway Park. What was working for you? What wasn't working for you? What was the usage percentages for your pitches? And I just, you know, watching it without looking at the numbers, like watching it live, you're just sitting there thinking like, this dude is averaging 12 pitches per inning. Like they're super aggressive, and that approach wasn't working. They weren't generating hard contact. They weren't putting balls in play. And if they were, they were dinky little pop-ups.
Three or less. Get him out of there. 3 pitches or less. You want to know how many pitches he averaged per plate appearance this last outing?
3.6.
Ooh, 3.6 pitches per plate appearance for Mr. Eovaldi.
For the whole start. Yeah, I love that. You could see it. I mean, they were super aggressive, but that approach just was not where they were not putting the ball in play. They were not barreling baseballs.
Well, it's
except for Giancarlo Stanton.
It's the easiest way to get them. I mean, like, you just acknowledge that they're feeding into your game plan early on, and Eovaldi stays one step ahead, one page ahead in the script. Here comes the curveball later, next time around, early. Why? I've seen you aggressive early the first time. And if I've got confidence I can throw this for strikes, it's either going to be 0-1 or I'm going to get a shit defensive swing on an early breaking ball and get more early weak contact. So
however
you want it, you can get it if you're Eovaldi and you're paying attention. And he was.
Yeah. Did you, what were your initial thoughts when Alex Cora gave Nathan Eovaldi the hook when he did? Do you believe that you can make the wrong decision and it still works out? Or if it works out, it's just the right decision?
No, you can make the wrong decision and it can work out for you. I don't know if it's necessarily at times the wrong decision. That's not what I'm saying happened here, but it's maybe it's the less than favorable matchup that you have, mm-hmm. but it works out.
Right. So was it the right or wrong decision?
I mean, looking back at it, how do you say it's the wrong decision?
I mean, 71 pitches, I want to say 71, 72, 73, somewhere in there. I thought that was Nate's game, and I understand Ryan Brazier has been throwing the ball really well since returning. And to quote Brazier himself, they asked him, you just pitched, four straight games. Like you appeared in four straight games. Like, are you worried about durability? And he was like, I've had the whole year off, so I'm ready to go. Like, I am pretty fresh. It doesn't matter that I just worked in four straight games. Like, I'm ready. I've pretty fresh having taken 5 months off this season. So Brazier was one of the best, if not the best. I mean, obviously Garrett Whitlock is going to be considered your best bullpen option, but going to Ryan Brazier there, it's like, all right, I don't hate that Brazier is coming in this spot. I just think that you could have gotten more out of Nate. So, again, I'm never going to be one to question Alex Cora. His baseball knowledge is infinite, but I think in that particular moment, would I have liked to have seen Nate continue to go? Cause like, was he laboring? No. Were guys starting to get good swings off on him? Not really. But yeah, especially, I think it's more so it's not that you didn't like Brazier coming in that spot. It's that as you sit there and you start to piece together, okay, so you're going to go to Brazier here to finish out the sixth. All right, who gets the seventh? Who gets the eighth? Who gets the ninth?
You got to think about who he's facing.
The only guy that can hurt you, really.
Not the only guy that can hurt you, Jared.
In that game.
But not the only guy that can hurt you. I know you want to think like you're thinking in that game because of hindsight. You don't know what it like. Think about this, all right? Like because what happened in that inning? Rizzo, bomb.
Rizzo, Aaron yes, Judge? off of Evaldi.
What's that?
Hello? Okay. Yeah. Off of Evaldi, yes.
Yes, off of Evaldi. Rizzo, bomb. Judge, knock.
Infield single.
What's that?
Infield single, so weak contact.
But you've just given up two hits, back-to-back, and now you've got the dude who absolutely fucking waylaid a ball. Like, so for Alex Cora, as the postseason goes, it has just gotten a little later very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, do I want him seeing him again? Do I want him seeing him for the third time? I don't know if I want that happening because he's already hammered him once. And a different look with maybe some different action might be the way we need to go right now. And I think that's where Alex Cora's mind is. That's the way that right there, Jared, is a safe judgment play. And I'm not saying he made this play because it was a safe call to make, but remember how I talk about guys having a list to choose from on which moves you want to make, the moves that keep you your job and the moves that are gut moves that you end up having to explain if they don't work out. But if they do work out, those are moves that add to your cachet as a baseball man.
Yeah.
Well, I think that move right there is a move that comes from the list that says, this is the move you make here based on the numbers and based on who we have down there and where we're at. And Alex, if you were to leave him in and he were to give up this two-run homer and the game be tied now, you would be answering questions on whether or not you left him in too long to face a guy who just hit a ball that's still going third off time. Him.
And so I didn't necessarily mean the only guy that can hurt you. I think what I meant to say was the one guy that you can't let beat you. Coming off of that series that the Yankees swept the Red Sox at Fenway Park and Giancarlo Stanton homered in all three games, and neither of them were garbage time homers. You could pinpoint each home run in all three of those games as the moment that the Yankees essentially won the baseball game. So Stanton was the guy that you couldn't let beat you.
Well, and could you think about also, who do you, like I said, who do you have coming behind him? What was it, Gallo?
Yeah.
So there's your three true outcome. So it's like, this guy's got a 33% chance of running into a fucking two-run jack here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, a three-run jack here. If we just pitch around Stanton here, like, unintentionally, mm-hmm. intentionally walk him, like,
yeah,
I don't know if I want to do that either. So, and again, factoring the third time through in, like, that's just all, I think, part of the front office conversation.
Yeah. So it worked out. Brazier immediate faces Stanton, and that's when Stanton hits the double off the wall. Judge gets cut down at home plate, and that was for a moment there, because I asked you, like, was there any point in this game where you felt like the tide was turning or that the Red Sox might be in trouble? And it was during the relay where I thought the Red Sox were in trouble, because I thought until you see the baseball end up in Kevin Pilecki's catcher's mitt and Aaron Judge is not yet in the frame, that's when I thought, okay, so now it's 3-2. You're factoring in Stanton's going to get to second base on this throw here. Now you get a runner in scoring position in a one-run ball game. Don't love this. And then Judge gets cut down a home plate, and it just changes the dynamic entirely, where you feel a little bit better about what's going on. Like, you thought maybe this is where the Yankees make things interesting. Maybe this is where they tie the game. Maybe they even take a lead to, okay, things just are clearly not going their way in this baseball game.
Yeah, it was not great.
No, it wasn't. But the Red Sox found a way. They found a way to peak, because that was the one thing. Same thing happened in 2018, where going into that postseason, the Red Sox had 108 wins. And what was everyone talking about? Well, I don't think that their bullpen is championship material. Yeah, they bludgeoned teams to death. They won 108 games, but I don't know if that bullpen holds up in October. And then Alex Cora said, that's fine. The guys that you have an issue with, they're probably not going to see any innings whatsoever. We're going to use our starters as part of the back end of our bullpen. And now you have a guy like Tanner Houck, who is starting baseball games for you. He also had some time in the bullpen, but he is a weapon, because he was a dude that was essentially, I don't want to call him an opener, because he would get 4 or 5 innings sometimes, but he would never be allowed to see up for a third time. No. Or what? I think he came out with a perfect game last Friday. He had he was perfect through 5, and they were just like, nope, not seeing the lineup for the third time. We got to win this baseball game. So now that he's in the bullpen and he can give you 1 or 2 electric innings, that's a weapon that I think a lot of teams just were not accounting for, or at least fans that were being critical. I saw Buster Olney was talking about how the edge goes to the Yankees in that wild card game because their bullpen was just so much better than the Red Sox bullpen. All right, cool. Well, Hansel Robles hasn't given up a run since August. Now you got Tanner Houck in that bullpen. Alex Cora has already shown that I'm not afraid to use a guy like Nick Pivetta in a relief spot, Eduardo Rodriguez in a relief spot.
This is all why I said that the Red Sox were my choice to win this ballgame, is because Alex Cora is not afraid to think outside of the box and manage the baseball game. Like, there's a difference between plugging and playing a game plan and then managing the baseball game, managing a series. And he is not afraid to manage a series. And I believe that's where you can crunch the numbers all you want, and you can run your algorithms and simulations all you want. You have to be able to look the individual in the eye, and you have to be able to feel what they're feeling and communicate what they're feeling, and know which starter you can run out in which situation. That's going to be leverage, whether it's high, low, but who can handle what? If they're an unconventional boy in a bullpen scenario, who can handle what? Well, who can manage that? And that's the question. And that's, I believe, the answer to that question is Alex Cora can do that and will do that.
He will do that. So we got Red Sox Yankees in the wild card round. We're going to get Dodgers Giants in the division series. We're just getting nothing but classic baseball rivalries right out the gate.
We can't move on without acknowledging the Schwarber homer to make it 3-0 against Garrett Cole. 2015, the Cubs and the fucking Pirates square off, and Schwarber does it to him. Then it was a 2-run homer then. but in the third inning to make it 3-0 again. Kyle Schwarber just absolutely fucking owns Garrett Cole in the third inning.
Yeah, and he also owns fastballs up and out of the zone. Like, that's one of those dudes that he loves to feast on heaters that are, you know, a baseball length above the strike zone. That's exactly where that fastball was. He got every bit of that heater. And yeah, I mean, Kyle Schwarber, the dude, Chaim Bloom was wearing it in Boston from the media, from the fans that are sheep that follow every single word that sports radio says, and all the fucking curmudgeon sports writers in this town. They were eating it up. They wanted Chaim Bloom fired, this and that. You didn't do enough. And you could make the case, like, could Chaim Bloom have added another reliever? Sure. Yeah. Okay. But when we sat there and told you that the Red Sox got the best offensive player acquired at the trade deadline, people laughed. They're like, okay, fine. He's hurt. He's broken. He was on the injured list for like a week and a half. Then he came back and he put up an OPS of almost 1,000. He was statistically the best hitter moved at the trade deadline. Check that box. Hansel Robles, as I mentioned earlier, has been outstanding for the Red Sox down the stretch. And they're just, Chaim Bloom's fingerprints were all over that game. They were all over that game. And you can even say Nathan Eovaldi to the Red Sox. That's Chaim Bloom too. He sent him from Tampa in 2018. So you look at that game and how everyone was down on Chaim after the trade deadline. What do you got to say now? And we'll see. We'll see what happens in the Chaim Bowl when the Red Sox have to face the Tampa Bay Rays. And Shane Baz goes in game two, who is the player to be named later in the fucking Chris Archer for Austin Meadows and Tyler Glasnow trade. He was the player to be named later, and now he's the game two starter against Chris Sale of the division series in Tampa. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think it's going to be a very interesting offseason as it pertains to the New York Yankees. I know Aaron Boone's future is up in the air now. I know a lot of people are saying that the window is closed. I don't think it's closed, but they definitely have to make some major adjustments. Like, this is not an offseason where you add a guy here, you add a guy there. I think they're really going to have to take a look at this roster and identify who is part of this core and who do we really need to move on from. Because if Aaron Judge is in his final season next year, identify that guy. All right, we're going to build around this guy. Is Glaber who you think he is? Is Glaber 2019 Glaber or is he 2021 Glaber? Because that's another guy that is supposed to be a part of your core that maybe you have to make a decision there. Gary Sanchez, another guy. Is he part of what you're trying to do moving forward? I would assume no. I would assume he's not. So there's going to be some major moves, I think, are coming with the New York Yankees this offseason. It'll be a really interesting one to see how they, because they're not a team that wants to just blow it up and then rebuild. They want to try and contend every single year, and that's very difficult to do, to rebuild and contend at the same time. It's been done before, so we'll see. Because they also want Cashman gone. They want everyone. Every time the Yankees don't win the World Series,
that's why that conversation is a whole nother conversation in and of itself. What the Yankees are going to do, who needs to go, blah blah blah. If you're a Yankee fan 3 weeks into this thing, everybody needed to go. Everybody was dumb. Everybody needed to be fired and released. And 3 weeks ago, there was no better team on the planet. And that's a whole nother day.
What a vicious cycle goes on.
What do we need? We breaking down this wild card, or we breaking down this division series now?
It's only fair if we go from the wild card game to the division series between the Tampa Bay Rays and the Boston Red Sox.
Well, let's start here. Where do you fall on the rotation? Where do you fall on the pitching staff, period? Because that's where things get started, and where the Tampa Bay Rays have separated themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to how they go about their business, how they cover 27 outs, and where Alex Cora is going to be thinking outside of the box. What do we got game one? Eduardo Rodriguez, Shane McClanahan.
Yeah. So Eddie versus Shane McClanahan. Eddie has been a wild card this season. This has been a guy that for in the second half of the season, you were literally getting hit, miss on his starts. But then you dig a little bit deeper. Then you kind of look at like, what's he doing? Like these first two games of the division series will be on the road, right? You're going 1-2 in Tampa. And Eduardo Rodriguez has, first of all, down the stretch in September through the end of the season, he's got a 3.19 and a 1.39 whip. 10.2 strikeouts per nine. That's over seven appearances, six of them are starts. So he's pitched well down the stretch. Need that. The Red Sox, I believe they're 20-12 in the games that he started this year. They've won three of his final four starts. Hasn't allowed a homer in his last five. He's got a sub four in the second half. And then you look at his road numbers. Decent. 18 starts, 3.95. Take that. And then his starts in Tampa, which you can't get more narrowing it down than that. Two starts in Tampa, a 2.25 and a 1.08 whip with a near 10 strikeouts per nine. Only one homer allowed in those two starts. Brandon Lau has his number. He's taken him deep three times, which is interesting for a lefty-lefty matchup. Nelly, 5-27, but damage in those five, two doubles, two homers.
Randy, you got to look at Randy. Randy, 3.64. Yandy, 4.12. Zunino, 4-11 with a jack. Margot, 4-12. I'm telling you right now, I don't
think
it looks...
Three of those four extra base hits for Zunino. Zunino's 4-11, double, triple, homer.
I don't know if game one is favoring the Boston Red Sox.
I don't know that it's not.
I don't know that it is, though. And from there, I don't know that the remainder favors the Boston Red Sox.
Chris Sale, Shane Boz.
Chris Sale, I mean...
Not stretched. Well, neither guy really is going to give you more than five.
Yeah, but if Chris doesn't have it early, I feel like it's problematic.
No doubt. I think game one is pivotal.
Oh, game one is huge. If you don't get five out of Eddie, problems.
Yes, I agree. You need Eddie to go five, and I think game one is pivotal, mostly for Boston.
Can we talk about Wander Franco for just a second? Why this dude's going to be the X factor?
Well, because he kills the Red Sox.
Not only because he kills the Red Sox, but he's a young, unproven, untested in this environment. But I've got a little nugget here that tells you, you know what? If this dude can put all of that aside, the emotion and hoopla that comes along with pro season play for the first time and just play the game he's been playing, Jared, Wander Franco had a 43 game on base streak this year in which he had more hits at 55 than he did swinging strikes at 48. Let me say that again. He got on base 43 games in a row. He had 55 hits during that time. He swung the bat and missed the ball 48 times. So 55 times he swung and got a hit. Only 48 times did he swing and miss. 43 straight fucking games.
Yeah.
He got on base doing that.
Well, like, to your concern about if the postseason is going to be something that rattles him or if he rises to the occasion, he made his major league debut.
Oh, at in the post. Home.
No, he made his major league debut at home against the Boston Red Sox and homer. Oh.
You know, well, that's great. Side note to that, Shane McClanahan, first pitcher in major league history to make his major league debut in the postseason.
Been there, done that.
I
think it's going to be a good series. I think it's going to be, I mean, I think it's going to be one of those series where you kind of see not necessarily the benefits, but rather the effects of this being a best of five versus a best of seven. If how this Alex, is best of seven, I don't feel confident picking the Red Sox.
How Alex Cora manages and handles this pitching staff will determine the success of the Boston Red Sox in this series.
No doubt. Completely agree. I mean, offenses, Tampa Bay Rays, I know that everyone's like, oh, they don't have any stars, this and that. They can score runs. They can score runs. And they like the fact that they fly under the radar in that regard, that, you know, they've got the stable and they're bullpen. They all throw gas, and that you don't want to, like, the perception that, you know, you get down 3-0 early to the Tampa Bay Rays and you're just going to lose because their bullpen's so good. They can bludgeon teams too. They can score runs.
Sure.
And you mix that with the fact that, yes, they have really good starting pitching and their bullpen is even better. They're a really good baseball team. It's why they won the division. It's why they have the best record in the league. It's why they have their first ever 100 win season in franchise history.
Jared, do you have a set of unbiased balls on you right now? Do you have a set of, if you had a set of unbiased balls, I would ask you, the holder of unbiased balls, do the Rays take this series? Do the Rays take this series? Do you have the fucking balls to be unbiased right now and say live on air what you said to me just moments ago off air while we were not recording, and that you have little to no faith in the Red Sox to be able to handle this? You said you were like, look, I don't know if Cora can pull all of the right strings and hit all of the right buttons.
If there's one thing that I do know,
that's a lot of plugging and playing going on down there in the bullpen.
I can't tell you. Words, not mine. I can't tell you who's going to win, but I can tell you that Cora is going to push all the right buttons. I can tell you that.
Well, he's going to. There's buttons down there for sure, mm-hmm. for sure.
And he's going to push the right ones. Yeah, I think what I am going to say is that it is, if the Red Sox can split in those first two games, I like their chances, because then you get Nate at home. His numbers at home this year are phenomenal. He was already one of the best pitchers in the American League this season statistically, but his numbers at home are so much better. So if you can get that split in games one and two in Tampa, come back to Fenway game three with Nate on the mound, then I like their chances to be able to steal one, because I will say that it would be stealing it. It's not like I'll sit here and tell you right now, very clearly and unequivocally, the Tampa Bay Rays are the better team, no doubt. But does the best team always win? Not in the best of five, they don't. So I do think that, I mean, if they go down 0-2, there's no, I don't think that they're hauling off three straight. I mean, they did that in April, but that was games 4, 5, and 6 of the season. But if you can get that split in Tampa with Nate in game three, yes, I do like the Red Sox chances.
I'm going to say this, what we saw, and I know that the Yankees have a lot to do with how Fenway felt last night,
mm-hmm.
or 2 days ago when you're listening to this. But that is like, that's a real advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a real advantage, especially in this year, coming off a season where you didn't have to deal with any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you were in the postseason before, and now you're going to feel it again, and it's going to be a completely different animal now.
Yeah.
Completely different. And yes. It very clearly favors Boston.
Sure. I mean, Tampa, it's not a fun place to play in the postseason. I know that, you know, people want to talk about the Tampa Bay Rays and their attendance and this and that. They show up for the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
they'll be
goes,
there, and they're loud.
A lot of, yeah, it goes
they're loud,
a lot.
And they're rowdy, and they're young. So it's not a fun place to play for opposing teams in the postseason when fans are allowed. It's just not. It's not a fun place to play. But neither is Fenway. And you saw that in the wild card game, which undoubtedly played a factor in Gerrit Cole melting down. I think that he can't handle that shit. He's one of those dudes that his whole life has been told how great he is. And then when he has 38,000 people telling him that he sucks and taunting him and chanting his name in a mocking fashion, I think that gets to someone like Gerrit Cole, no doubt. But, while it is a factor, I still think that the Tampa Bay Rays pitching can take those fans right on out of it. they have the ability to just shut it the fuck down. But I kind of just, I point back to some of the head-to-head competition that the Rays and the Red Sox have had this year. And there have been some tough losses for the Red Sox, games that maybe this time around, those are wins for Boston. Who knows? I mean, they had a 7-1 lead that they lost because fucking Verdugo lost a ball in the sun. They had a game where Nick Pivetta had a no hitter through seven innings. They lost that game. I mean, they can hang with the Rays. Yes, they're a 100 win team. Yes, they won the division. Yes, they have the best record in the league, but the Red Sox have proven in head-to-head competition, they can hang with them. And in a short series, like what I said, you get that split, you come home, you got Nate at home. I like their chances.
What are the, haven't the Rays won the, would they win the last 11 out of 15?
No, the season series was,
is that for somebody else?
The Red Sox were 8-11 with a -2 run differential against the Rays this year. 3-7 in Tampa, 5-4 at home. They had a winning record against the Rays at home.
But did they win their last, or did the Red Sox lose? No, the last 11 out of the 15 games they played.
That doesn't sound right.
No.
Because they, yeah, no, they didn't go up 8-0 against Tampa. They're 8-11 against them this year.
Do we need to make a prediction on the series?
Yeah, I think we do.
Well, I'm going to say Rays in five.
I mean, someone had to pick the Rays.
I'm going to say Rays in five.
That's fine.
I'll give you the opportunity to counter my Rays in five with an extremely, extremely romantic
Chalk Braden.
Emotional Chalk pick.
No balls, Braden. Going with the favorite again.
I'm not, what are you talking about? I just went with the Cardinals. I just rode the Redbirds. I just rode the hot ass Redbirds. All the way to the car. I am always here for a good time. This is just is what it is.
Red Sox in four.
Wow. Sox in four. Already booking the split. Loving Nate in game three.
I think they split the first two in Tampa. I think you got Nate in game three. And then blood in the water. They just go for the throat in game four. Yeah.
Is there no way they would save Nate for game four, though?
No.
Burnham, play, Day, back. I mean, this is a dude who did earn all of that money basically on one night in October.
He really did. that he lost. He lost the game, yeah.
Let's not forget that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No, I still love Nate. I mean,
he absolutely saved that game. I mean, there may have been a loss in the win-loss column, but he saved that game.
Yes. I mean, I maintain the Red Sox won that World Series 5-0. They did.
That was
because
all
even you remember that fucking play that Ian Kinsler just booted a ball. Like the Red Sox won that 18-inning game. Like they had the lead. Kinsler booted it. And I mean, if Pedroia is healthy, that's an out. Like Red Sox won that series 5-0. So, yeah, I don't want to say I like Red Sox in four. I'm picking Red Sox in four. I am. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Didn't see that coming. Totally didn't see
you
that
thought,
coming.
You thought I was going to say Sox in five. You did. You thought that.
Yeah.
Sox in four.
I don't know if that's a good pick.
I don't know if Rays in five is a good pick.
I think the Rays in five is a much better pick than the Sox in four.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, Chalky Studebaker over here.
NL wildcard?
Yeah, we can talk about that for a quick second. But first, I got to tell you about my penis.
Please, talk to me, Dick.
Most guys have tried different ways to last longer, but thinking about baseball doesn't always work. Folks at Roman, it's an online men's health company. They're changing the game with Roman swipes. It's the secret to longer lasting sex. Roman swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're effective, easy to use, fast acting, and they don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in a discreet, unmarked package, and each swipes packet is small enough to hide inside of your wallet for whenever you need it. They're super easy to use. Just take the swipes out of the packet, you swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That's it. That's all you got to do. Just go to getroman.com/starting, and you can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. That is getroman.com/starting. Sock Stros. This series is getting no love.
Well, that would be the ALDS.
What are you talking about?
We talked the ALDS if you'd like. I asked you if you'd like to talk about the NLDS.
Well, no, I don't want to.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, not right now.
All right, well, let's talk Astros and let's talk the Chicago White Sox. Let's talk.
I kind of like that this series is flying under the radar. I mean, you get Stros Red Sox and pale Yankees host? Right out of the chute.
There's going to be some good pitching matchups here. I want people to appreciate these pitching matchups.
You're going to get great offense too.
Oh, you're going to get good offense, but I mean. Here's the thing about the offense, all right? You've got a veteran lineup in the Houston Astros who just do not punch out. They punched out the second least amount of times in all of baseball, lowest strike percentage. Like these dudes, it feels like thrive in these high-pressure, high-leverage spots, this entire lineup. It's fucking scary, dude. And you can get over the trash can bullshit or you cannot. But for better or worse, baseball has moved on. And I think what these guys have now done is gotten back to what motivated them prior to. And that was the desire to be great again. And how do you do that? You step up in the big moments, in the big spots. And this Astros team has dudes all throughout the lineup who have done just that. Altuve, Brantley, Correa, Gurriel, your fucking AL batting champ. Like, they just, Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker is a fucking
probably the best hitter in the lineup
to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker is an absolute rat.
Best hitter in the lineup yesterday.
Baseball rat. No, because Michael Brantley's in the lineup.
Well, he's a professional hitter.
And that just, for me, there's something to be said for that at bat. Because it doesn't always have to, like, being a hitter doesn't always have to do with how you hit the ball. So, looking at that lineup, I think, dude, there's just not many holes. There's not many holes at all. And then I think about the White Sox lineup and I think about, yeah, there's dudes in there that can absolutely bang. There's dudes in this lineup that when they're hot can absolutely hurt you, crush you. It becomes a long lineup. I don't know that it becomes as long and as a forceful lineup.
It's top heavy
as the Astros, but you think about the first 3-4 dudes you've got in that lineup. It's what, Tim Anderson, Lou Bob, Eloy, Okada. Abreu, and that's a question. Abreu, right? Abreu's sick, or he's feeling some flu-like symptoms, or whatever it may be.
Yeah,
I'm sure he'll be fine. But
Yasmani Grandal.
But then you get down towards the bottom of the lineup, and that's where I don't want to say that there's some let up, but maybe there's your air holes.
Yeah, there's a lot of a lot to be desired on base percentages at the bottom.
Yeah, well, it when you look at that lineup and you look at the Astros lineup, you look at the Astros lineup and you think turnover. I don't know that you think that with the White Sox lineup.
What about a guy like an Adam Engel down the bottom?
Sure. What's that?
That gives it some length.
I mean, you've got Kyle Tucker hitting seventh in the Astros lineup, seventh or eighth at times. Like, Martin Maldonado's a fucking wash. Like, that, like, don't throw him a first pitch fastball and you'll survive Martin Maldonado.
I've got nothing but love for Martin Maldonado, but that is that's a pitcher hitting in the American League. Sorry. It is. Sorry.
But yeah, like with Kyle Tucker down there, and look, you could really put that dude anywhere, I feel like, throughout that lineup. Marwin Gonzalez.
He's in there.
Depth. Alanis Diaz.
Still kicking. Remember when he was with the Cardinals and he was like hitting like 370?
Yeah. Yeah. They've got the Orioles, not the Orioles, fuck. The Astros also have a kid named Jose, I think it's Jose Siri. I don't know if he'll be back. He fucked his thumb up in the series against the A's. That kid is good too. But yeah. Then I go to the bullpen. I like the Astros bullpen.
It's a good bullpen.
I think I like the Astros bullpen, but I think I like the White Sox bullpen a little more.
Well, you have to love the White Sox. I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong. Oh, I'm not. It's not a matter of right or wrong. Correct me if you feel differently. But I feel like the casual baseball fan, probably not watching a ton of White Sox baseball this year.
Mm-hmm.
And casual baseball fans probably tuned in for the Field of Dreams game.
Yep.
And the White Sox bullpen, not a good showing in the Field of Dreams game.
Didn't do great.
I feel like a lot of fans that maybe tuned in for that game and they saw the White Sox bullpen come out there and they stink up the joint. It leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. Cause I did some investigating on this. You know, talking to baseball, like guys that play fantasy baseball, like they know the names, they know the numbers, but they're not sitting there and watching the games. And I was like, you know, what do you think about, you know, White Sox Astros? Who you got? And one of my buddies is like, oh, Astros. I mean, like, lineup's great. White Sox bullpen stinks. And I'm like, White Sox bullpen stink? What the fuck are you talking about? Like, yeah, I mean, like, you know, you saw them blowing those games against the Yankees. I mean, they're overrated. And like, so you watched the Field of Dreams game. Just yeah. Say that. Just say you only sat down to watch one White Sox game this year, and it was the Field of Dreams game, and you saw Stanton Judge and hit the ball into the fucking corn, and like now you think the bullpen sucks. Mm-hmm. Just say that. Well, I mean, I watched a few games, but like, yeah, it's like, no. You watched one game, and that's what you've built your take off of. The White Sox bullpen is legit as fuck.
They got firemen down there, bud. They've got firemen down there. Obviously led by Liam Hendricks, but they've got Michael Kopech.
Michael Kopech, Hendricks, Crochet, Bummer,
mm-hmm.
And Kimbrel. Those are five guys with closer shit.
Well, let's not forget about old fucking Ruiz, Jose Ruiz.
Yeah, they've got a handful of relievers coming at you from the right, from the left, blowing 99, wipeout sliders, closer shit. And that is scary when it comes to October, because we were just talking about the Red Sox, where they're going to have to get creative and like, hey, you started all year, but let's get you in here in the seventh inning and see what happens. These guys with the White Sox, they've got roles. They've got no egos. Hey, you used to close? Cool. We need you in the eighth. Can you get the eighth? Awesome. Thanks, man. Hey, we got 3, 4, 5 coming up in the sixth. We're going to need you out here, Kopech. I know that, you know, you'd be a closer on most other teams. We need you here in the sixth because we got 3, 4, 5 coming up. Can you do that? Yeah? Awesome. That's what they're rolling out there. So, yeah, the White Sox are a very scary fucking team. And I know that a lot of the narrative around the White Sox has been, well, weak division. And even in a weak division, not that great of a record. And you look at the NL West, you got the D-backs, you got the Rockies, and the Padres fell off towards the end. That's why you got 107 and 106 win teams in the NL West. Look at the division. So then you look at the AL Central, not a good division. Why aren't the White Sox better? Why isn't their record better if they're beating up on all these teams in their division? Don't let that shit navigate you away from identifying the White Sox as a team that can fuck shit up this October, because they can. They've got the offensive, like, and we know we're talking about like the back end of the lineup, how that lineup is top heavy. But guess what? If you've got some thumpers 1 through 5, sometimes that's all you need if you've got a bullpen like that behind you waiting to shut games down in the back end. So yeah, I all due respect. I've never been like an anti Astros guy. I don't give a fuck really about all that other stuff, but I just want to make sure that the White Sox get the love and respect that they deserve for the arms that they're going to be throwing at you. And, you know, the offensive threat that they possess in the top half of their lineup as they go up against the Houston Astros in this.
The
series.
Best part about this for the White Sox is their lineup is going to be facing really good pitching to start. And the lineup of the Houston Astros is also going to be facing really good pitching. So this is about which lineup is going to capitalize on those starters. And for my money, who's going to break through those starters early on?
Who's going to get the big hit? That's what
how's that going to go? Because you've got guys that are throwing the ball well. Who's going to game one? Is it
McCullers?
Lynn. Yeah, McCullers is throwing the shit out of the ball. Lance Lynn, fucking Cy Young hopeful. I mean, not now. That's not going to happen. But has thrown the ball well all season long. Giolito, who is coming off a wonderful, wonderful stretch run to close out the regular season. Yeah, I think it's about which offense is able to break through on a starter early. And I like it because if you can get to a starter early, Jared, and you get into that bullpen early, you start exposing guys early. And the earlier you expose them, the better. Because we all know that those dudes are going to get run out there with frequency. You're not going to see everybody in that bullpen come the postseason. There's going to be guys that get work and then guys that are in those mop-up type roles. Mm-hmm. So you want to expose those guys that are high leverage. Let's get them in this ball game early.
Yeah. I can't wait.
I'm in there early in the series.
The reason why I was kind of saying earlier about how like this series might not get any love is because we were looking at the schedule for the games coming up in the four game Friday and the games that start on Thursday. You're going to get Red Sox Rays and you're going to get game one of White Sox Astros, and the start times for the series, they're not prime time. So right now, as Dr. Claw points out, you know, it's prime time. Like those are games that you want to get the eyeballs on. And I would argue that I know the Red Sox are a big market team or whatever, but you might see the best baseball on Thursday in the 4 o'clock game. You might see that. Is that out of the realm of possibility to expect that, really?
Between the White Sox and the Astros?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think, well, let me put it like, yeah, maybe so, because I think that this is a bullpen, or I think that this is, look, I'm going to say this much. All right. As much as I like the White Sox here and have liked them all season long, I don't know if I like them in this series here against the Astros.
You're bailing on the White Sox already.
No, I don't want to.
You just said the White Sox have no fucking shot in the series.
No, I didn't say that at all. I didn't even come close to that.
You got Astros in three?
No, definitely don't have Astros in three. Because I think my boy Giolito's going to carve. I want him to
Giolito, Framber Valdez, game two.
Ooh. And the reason I don't like Framber is because the dude throws strikes and has the best ground ball percentage in Major League Baseball.
He's got a good defense behind him.
What's that?
He's got a good defense behind him.
Oh, he sure does. He sure does. You know what I thought about? Let's also acknowledge the fact that this is Dusty Baker and Tony La Russa squaring off against each other. This is like a grumpy old men meets fucking the Mighty Ducks. Like you got just two old dudes who are just like, baseball for a hit run, batting average, and I guess I gotta teach these kids how to play the game the right way. And on our way to win a World Series, we taught them how to love the game and play it the way it should be played. Like, it's two old dogs going at it, man. Love it.
Great.
Love it.
Manager of the year in this game?
I mean, my manager of the year pick is. And you know what, Jared? Win, not if, but win the fucking Chicago White Sox. Take this series.
Wow.
From the Houston Astros.
Wow.
You will know why. You will know why. Because Tony, hopefully Tony, this will be the point in time that the Tony we get is the Tony that just rolls the balls out and lets the kids play. I want to see Tony tap back in to that bullpen specialist that he was back in the day. This is the man who basically formed and molded and birthed Dennis Eckersley, the Hall of Fame closer.
He did.
Okay?
Yep.
I want to see him tap back into that and just, you want to talk about pushing buttons? I want to see the pale hose skipper, just like you believe the Red Sox skipper is going to be pushing buttons and pulling strings. I want to see Tony go to work. Show the baseball world you're not too far over your skis here.
White Sox and how many?
I'm going to say the White Sox in four.
I'm going to go White Sox in five.
Ooh. Who do you got? What game do you have? What two games do you have them winning? We don't know what four and five look like, but are there any early games that you've got?
Probably one and four. I mean, the White Sox are a very good team at home this year. I don't know where they are in terms of winning percentage at home, but the White Sox this year were 53-28.
So did you just say you got Lance Lynn not getting out of the first inning?
No, I don't have that.
Well, what'd you say? Say it.
I think the Astros win like a 3-1 ball game in game one. I don't think that there's a ton of damage done. But I don't have the White Sox losing at home in this series and getting it done in Houston in game five.
I like that. You got him getting it done in Houston game five.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is strong.
Yeah. Right. Cause then that wouldn't make sense that I said 1-4. Yes. They're going to have to win. That means they dropped the first two and then win three straight.
Yeah, to win in five, they're going home. They're going to sweep in Houston.
They're gonna have to win three straight if they lose the first two.
Yeah, if they lose the first two in a five game series, you absolutely have to win the next three.
Mm-hmm. I like that pick.
And yeah. Those games are gonna be played.
Yep. Okay. That's my pick. I got the White Sox.
Did you just realize what you just put out there in the universe?
Yep. Yep, I got the White Sox losing the first two and then winning three straight.
Did you just say you don't have them?
The first two are in Houston.
Oh, Carrabba's.
Yeah, I got them losing the first two in Houston, the White Sox winning two in Chicago, and then winning a decisive game five in Houston.
I've got them having success early.
Okay.
One of those two is getting split.
Okay. All right. We both got the White Sox. We got them getting there in different ways. Brewers. My Milwaukee Brewers versus the Atlanta Braves. This series begins on Friday. Oh, boy.
This right here. Yeah. The reason that this is a series I'm going to be salivating over.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of similar to what we're talking about, the starting rotations, but as good as the Brewers rotation is, I mean, they are lights out. Mm-hmm. They are incredible. The Braves, they're not running just any old slapdicks out there. These dudes are good too. And they're good enough to be exactly what the Brewers pitchers represent, which is arms that could completely silence an offense. Just silence an offense. So this is a series, again, where the starting pitching is going to have everything to do with how these games go. Like the success of the starting pitching. Because we can all just go right to the bullpen of the Milwaukee Brewers and go, well, like you don't want to get it to where Hader's got the baseball with any kind of lead. Like even in the eighth inning, you don't want to get it to Hader with the lead. But now you have to think about what getting it to Hader looks like because you don't have Devin Williams.
You don't.
And that was a luxury that was really, really, really nice to have.
I really don't want to make a pick in this series.
What's that? Say it louder, Jared.
I really don't want to make a pick in this series.
Oh.
I really don't.
What's got to happen?
Game one. Game one, Charlie Morton versus Corbin Burnes. Game two, Max Fried versus Brandon Woodruff in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and then Friday, what do you got? Saturday. A Tyler Anderson and Peralta?
Yeah. Old Freddie. I mean, you can kind of look at this Brewers lineup, and there's a lot of unsuspecting studs here. Willy Adames, obviously, when he came over from Tampa, lit it up for the Milwaukee Brewers. Avisail Garcia, another guy that just out of nowhere dropping 30 bombs. Luis Arias, he hit 23 tanks. It's not your typical Brewers.
So what you're doing right now is trying to talk yourself into your Milwaukee Brewer pick.
I didn't love how the Brewers finished out their season.
Because I don't have to talk myself into my Atlanta Brave pick here.
You don't like the Braves?
No, I'm saying I don't have to talk myself into Atlanta Brave pick.
Yeah.
Well, like I'm confident in my Atlanta Brave pick. Doesn't sound like you're confident in your Milwaukee Brewer pick.
I'm not. So I didn't love how the Brewers played down the stretch. I don't love the Devin Williams injury. The Braves essentially.
The Brewers have said that they're not sure that they're going to come off the way that they're using Hader. They're not going to let the Devin Williams injury impact the way that they're deploying this dude in the postseason.
That's fine, but you still need to fill those gaps back there. That's a big weapon to not have. And this Brewers lineup is not the 2018 relentless go for the throat, no free outs. Anyone in here can hurt you with a tank type lineup. It's not that. It's not. This team this year, division champion, NL Central champs, they were built off their pitching. And you're still going to have Corbin Burnes. You're still going to have Brandon Woodruff. You got Freddie Peralta. It's a team that can still, especially in a short series, their starting pitching can carry them. No doubt. But I just think that the Braves, after last year going up 3-1 against the Dodgers, there's a lot of unfinished business there. There's a lot of we're playing on with house money. We lost Ronald Acuna Jr. We didn't have Mike Soroka, Marcelo Ozuna. There's a lot of like, hey, if people don't believe in us, we do. Like, we know.
Yeah,
like,
but you know what? Sometimes a lot of that stuff, Jared, it happens, and it's stuff like that that allows space to clear for other guys to come in and become the ball players that they're going to become. And that doesn't happen without some of the shit unfolding that does. You know, that's just that simple. It's that simple. And so for the Braves, being given an opportunity to get away from the outside noise about you're not going to be good now because you don't have your big bat, who's a trash human being in Marcelo Ozuna. You don't have Mike Soroka, a young stud who you were absolutely going to be depending on to ride through this season. You don't have any of that now. And the Braves have said, so what? So what? We're still good. You don't get to just turn a blind eye to an infield that has everybody in there, 25 plus homers. You don't just get to do that. You don't get to tell us that Austin Riley balling out the way he has isn't going to make a difference. Like, that was a guy that needed to do that to grab your attention and tell you that we're for real. Well, guess what? He did. He did. Guess how good we'd fucking be if we didn't, if we would have Ronald Acuña Jr. as well. Guess how good we'd be if we had Mike Soroka on the bump, chucking pellets with us as well. We'd be really good.
Yeah. So on the other side of things, I don't love how Will Smith has pitched for the Braves. I mean, these are going to be late and close situations. In head-to-head competition this year, Dallas, the Braves and Brewers played each other 6 times. 3-3. 3-3 head-to-head.
Love that. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah, I think honestly, what's really making me sit on the fence is how the Brewers finished out their season, which you can say, well, you know, they clinched. It's, you know, what do you want them to do? Play balls to the wall? And it's like, well, yeah, I did want that. I did. I wanted them to finish strong so that you don't have to ramp it back up once the postseason starts. I mean, you saw the Rays do it. The Rays were playing games like they were fucking postseason games against the Yankees, and they had nothing to gain from that. Nothing at all.
No, you have everything to maintain. It's not about gain. It's about maintain.
Sure, sure. And I just did. I did not like how the Brewers finished out their season. I did not like that at all. And the Braves did finish strong. They did. And they also have the ass because of how their season ended last year. You look at that Braves lineup. What does it do, Dallas?
They
Soler, Freeman, Albies, Riley, Duvall. I mean, even getting Eddie Rosario for a fucking dugout mascot. Like Dansby Swanson, they're deep. Darnell behind the dish. Like it's a deep lineup, and they fuck Dallas.
They sure
do. You've got an entire infield that is popping what? 25 homers.
Yeah, Duvall's
got 38. Riley's got 33. Albies has 30. Freeman's got 31. Soler's got 27. Yeah. Dansby had 27.
Yeah. Dansby's the only guy with 30 or without 30 in the infield. The only dude.
I know that game two is going to be a real treat. I mean, Morton has excellent postseason experience and success. Corbin Burns, a Cy Young candidate, no doubt. But Max Fried versus Brandon Woodruff, that's going to be one that you're going to want to sit down and really take in. So that's Saturday, game two. That game is going to be a treat. I expect that to be, you know, the new way of watching postseason baseball is maybe you get a guy to the fifth and you take him out with an out because you're trying to make a switch. Maybe the guy's going to see the lineup for the third time and now you want to turn it over to the bullpen or whoever. I could see game two, Max Fried, Brandon Woodruff, both guys giving you more than 6 innings. And I'm going to love that.
I mean, I think we've got a shot early on to see a legacy start from Corbin Burns.
Sure.
Like this is where, like, you have a regular season that Corbin Burns had. This is where you can really, really start to put your name in those conversations for like top tier perennial frontline dudes.
Yep.
I'm going. I'm here for the chaos. I want Atlanta in five. I don't know that this thing gets settled early. I'm here for Atlanta in five. Strictly because if you turn it over to the bullpen, I don't know. I don't know that the Brewers bullpen is just that much better now. Without a Devin Williams in there, that's big.
It's huge.
It's big, man. The Braves have got, I mean, look, what, and I don't know, what are you hung up on Will Smith about?
He is not I mean, even when he gets the job done, it's not easy. It's not easy.
I mean, you feel like he's had a decent last couple months? No?
The Brewers played ass baseball down the stretch. I mean, they swept the Mets, whoopty fucking do, but they got swept by the Dodgers to finish it out. They lost a series to the Cardinals. Before that, they got swept in a four-game series by the Cardinals.
Just look up how old, just tell me how old Willie Smith did between August and September, or just the last of September, just the month of September. I'm guessing the month of September probably went well for him, like numbers wise. Sub two.
In the month of September, he did okay. In the month of September, he had a.
Maybe August and September a little bumpier.
13 appearances, a 1.38 ERA.
How many punches? 13 appearances, so what? 13 innings?
18 strikeouts in 13 innings.
Okay. How many homers?
If you include August, a 355, 10 earned runs in 25 and a third innings, 35 strikeouts in 25 and a third.
So August was not outstanding.
Yeah, he had a couple blips. There was the Nats got him for three earned. The Reds got him for two. Yeah, and then he had back-to-back appearances against the Marlins and Orioles where he gave up one. The Giants got him. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess he had a good September. It didn't feel that way watching the games, but statistically, the damage was limited.
Luke Jackson? Tyler Matzik?
I mean, you know I have to pick the Brewers. I have to pick the Brewers.
I mean.
But it is the least confident that I've ever had in a pick I've ever made.
If you want to pick the Brewers, you can. You don't have to. You can.
I mean, do you think I want to get uninvited to Milwaukee for the rest of my life? I can't do that.
I mean, look, I don't have anything against the Brewers. I love the Brewers.
Yeah, I'm not saying you don't. I mean, I don't,
great organization.
Like, that's what I kind of want to know is how do the Brewer fans feel about this series? Like, do Brewer fans have confidence in the Brewers right now? Are they rolling into this series and be like, let's fucking go? Or are they like, damn, like we really limped in there? Like, when was the last time that they beat a good team?
But like, that's where I think
a series from the Cubs, cool. They swept the Indians, they stink.
That's what can give a club, that's what can give a fan base a false sense of security. Is you finish great, division leader, that's outstanding. But
When's the last time you played a game of baseball that you had to win? They took three out of four in San Francisco. That's when like I was really hyping up the Brewers, was when they took three out of four in San Francisco. They lost the finale. I think that's when they moved to 30 games over 500. Yeah. They moved to 30 games over 500, 10 and a half up. But then from September 2nd on, it was not good.
Bravos in five. Jared agreed. Ouch. Sorry about it, Brewers. It's tough. That is tough to see, Jared. Tough to see.
I'm gonna go Brewers in five, but it is the least amount of confidence I think I've ever had in a pick in this show's history.
Who had less confidence? You and your pick of the Brewers or AJ Preller and Jace Tingler?
Ooh. I mean, I don't even think it's Tingler's fault.
I got a question. How in the fuck? And I know the answer to this, but it just like the optics of it. It's like, hey, man, I want to let you know you're nowhere near good enough to lead us like this organization. You're not the guy to lead us to a championship. Like what you can do, what you provide this organization, not championship caliber. But we'd love to keep you around. We'd love to have you here. We'd love to, like, I don't like that messaging. I don't know. That doesn't set well with me.
Well, that kind of backs up what I'm saying. Like, somebody else in there.
Right. Somebody like, but it's like, okay. And thank
you very
much.
It's not working.
Thank you. Okay. So it's not working. And thank you very much for keeping me in the organization. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to stay in the game and to stay here. But it's almost like, hey, I don't want to talk you into firing me, like, and not giving me a job at all here, but I just got to ask, if I'm not the guy to lead you to a championship or help contribute to that, what am I doing here? What do you want to see me do? That would be my question. Like as far as development goes, if you're a manager and you're told no thanks, you've probably got questions. But if you stay in-house, much like Luis Rojas was offered the same thing, all right, well, what am I doing? And are you just throwing me a bone here?
Has anyone ever taken that up?
Taken what up? Ask that question?
No, like, hey, you're fired, but we're going to offer you another position within the organization. Has anyone ever taken it?
I don't know. We're about to find out. If they haven't, I've got to believe that absolutely, yes, that's happened before. Well, I don't know about manager, but Dave Righetti for the Giants.
Mm-hmm. There's been situations where managers have retired and then taken a role within the organization somewhere. But like guys that are young enough to get a managerial position somewhere else, are they just like, no, dude, I'm a manager. I want to manage.
Yeah, I don't know if there's been a manager that has been relieved of their managerial duties
and then stayed
within the organization.
Yeah. Like Tony La Russa was working in the Red Sox front office when Dombrowski was here.
Yeah. Tony, should I trade this? Yeah, absolutely. Fucking trade him.
Tony's got a ring with the Red Sox.
Well, those are the series.
No, we didn't break down Dodgers Giants.
Oh, you still want to break them down?
Of course.
Logan Webb, game one. Is that the rumor?
Game one, Logan Webb. Game two, Kevin Gausman.
I like that. I like that a lot. Logan Webb, ice water in his veins.
24 years old.
This fucking kid is primed. He is primed. That's why you roll this dude out game one. Coming off the biggest start of his career, in which he absolutely dominated and hit a bomb. Like, there's no better start to be coming off of than the last one when you're going to make the biggest start and the most important start, which is always the next one of your career in this division series. Like, I don't even know what the numbers are, but I'd love to know what the record is of the San Francisco Giants when Logan Webb pitches.
I can tell you that right now. San Francisco Giants, when Logan Webb pitches in 2021, Dallas, what do you think it is?
What do you mean, 32 starts?
27 games, 27. 26 starts.
26 starts. I'm going to say they won 19 of those ball games.
22
of those ball games.
22-5.
Just for context, the Dodgers won all of 11 of Max Scherzer's starts.
Yeah.
That's Max Scherzer.
Yep.
Max Scherzer. The Dodgers won all 11 of his starts. This is rookie Logan Webb for the San Francisco Giants, a 80-83 hopeful win team, and that was being very gracious. They won 22 of his 26 starts.
Walker Buehler's enjoying himself right now.
Why is that?
He just tweeted, I open twist offs with my teeth because I choose to. It's fun and it makes me feel cool. If you think it's weird because you want to use a bottle opener, then you haven't drank enough beers in your life.
Oh, God.
That's the game one starter right there.
Oh, God.
Game one starter, baby. He's lubed up.
Living that life.
He has to.
We just saw Kenley Jansen tonight.
We did. He looked good.
And is there any thought on whether or not you can rely on him? Is there any worry about whether or not you can rely on him?
I don't think there's ever been a fan base harder on a good player more than Dodger fans have been harder on Kenley Jansen at times.
I mean,
I think Yankee fans would stand. I'm talking about like recently.
You go look at Kenley's numbers overall, and I believe that those would be numbers that would slap some people across the face.
Yeah, I think, you know, he gets some real tough love in LA for a guy that just consistently is about as dependable as you're going to get from a back end guy, from a closer, because, you know, there's this weird mindset with baseball fans that if your closer doesn't go out there and pull a Brad Lidge in 2008, and just save every single game, that they're a bum. Like, closers are going to blow games. The best closers do. It happens. And I feel like they just get so down on him if he doesn't save every single game. But
well, to their point, I'll say this. There was a period, and it's really been the last 4 or 5 years, I think, where you've seen Kenley Jansen, like, look, the traffic on the base path has increased.
This year?
I think that is something that catches your eye when you're in the ninth inning, because it's a glaring moment in the ball game. And when you're used to a guy coming in and being shut down dominant, like, I'm punching you the fuck out. Nobody's getting on first base. Like, I'm not struggling to put you away. None of that was happening. And then I would bet you go back to look at the numbers, Jared. I don't know if it's like 2016, 2017, somewhere in that area where the command started to flutter a little. You're starting to see a little more free passes. You're not starting to see as many punch outs. And when you take that kind of a hit, when those numbers that I'm talking about specifically, the walks per nine and the strikeouts per nine, when those go in opposite directions, that's not good. And I think you visually see that in the ninth inning, and it just feels different than if you see that from a starter or if you see that from a middle reliever struggling. It might not be as apparent because those aren't going to always be like leverage situations. But a closer starts to walk people and not punch people out, you start to notice that. But if he's getting out of those spots unscathed, meaning the runs aren't coming at the end of it all, and he's getting out of it, to your point about maybe it's not clean, but it's getting out. Well, then, hey, he's getting the outs.
Yeah, and those 2 years that you pointed out were outstanding seasons. Like what I was going to say earlier about Kenley, when you're talking about traffic, it's noticeable with Kenley because he's coming up from godlike numbers. 2016, a 0.67 whip. 2017, a 0.75 whip. And then by 18.
In the next year, right?
Yeah, 0.99 whip.
Okay. Then the next
and
year.
And then it's a 10.06 whip. And then it's an 11.5 whip. And then this year it's a 10.43 whip. It's like, all right.
What were the strikeouts at that time doing too?
Strikeout 13.6, 14.4, 10.3, 11.4, 12.2, 11.2. It's the walks per nine that have gone in the other way.
The walks per nine, but the strikeouts go from, what'd you say? 14?
14, 4, and 10, 17. 11? To 10.3, to 11.4, to 12.2, to 11.2.
You're fucking shaving 3.5 punch outs.
But I mean, when you're a reliever that's still doing 12-2, 11-2, that's great. Like, I'll take that all day with like a one whip.
Yeah, but you got another base runner on base now, and you're the guy in the ninth inning. So you're adding a base runner, shaving a fucking punch out, and putting runner on base.
Walks per nine, starting in 2017, 0.9, 2.1, 2.3, 3.3 this year, 4.7, career high. So
that's three, like I said, of at least a walk per nine.
Correct.
So that's where the fans are coming from. Like, yeah, fuck, no, this guy throws the ninth inning and there's people on base every fucking time.
Yeah. Yep. But I still trust him. I do. I love Kenley. Big fan.
See, so there you go. There's the Kenley conundrum. That's the Kenley conundrum. There's been people on base with more frequency year after year, but for the most part, he's still keeping them from scoring.
Yeah, I think people get frustrated with walks. People get frustrated when closers are putting guys on base that didn't necessarily earn the right to be there. It's like, all right, you're just not throwing strikes, especially when it's going up and up and up and up and up. But Giants Dodgers is going to be fucking awesome. I think it's going to be a series that by the end of it, you're going to see a lot of people on Twitter saying, wish that was the best of seven.
Well, how about the depth? The depth is going to be on display in this series of both teams.
For sure.
Of both teams. Gabe Kapler.
Oh, he loves it.
Mover and a shaker, baby.
Pitching changes out the twat in the series.
And yes, for the Giants fans, and let me say this, for the Giants fans who understand what's been going on all season long, thank you, and you are welcome. Yes. We very well may have some Giants merch dropping very soon. A little late night love, if you will.
The fuck does that mean?
A little late night. See, Jared, if you were on the West Coast and you knew about that West Coast baseball, you would know about that. You would know what that is. Giants got a guy. Giants got a guy who shows up late night. He's been showing up late night. It might be late in the night, might be late in the day. But you don't want to fuck around. You don't want to fuck around with old late night Lamont. Don't want to do it, Carrabas. Pulled off the bench. Hadn't seen a heater in 2.5-3 hours. Lamont, you got to pull something in you? Sure do, Cap. Give me a fucking stick and get out of my way.
I'm interested in the merch.
Late night Lamont. So where are you going with this? Where are you going with this, Jared? Because you've been beating a drum all year long. You've been stoking a fire all year long.
Yeah, all I know. I know where I'm going with this. No one cares where I'm going with this. Everyone wants to know where you are going with this.
I mean, I feel like I've only got one choice to make. But what I know Giants fans don't want is they don't want me to jump on the Giants wagon right now. No, that's the last thing they want.
Yeah.
But again, there's other Giants fans who know me and have understood what this entire season has been about between myself and the San Francisco Giants.
You are less welcome in San Francisco than Jacoby Ellsbury is at Yankee Stadium.
That is just not true.
I think that's more than true.
That is just not even close to being true.
Very true.
Not even close. I'd like to thank the establishment right near the ballpark, right across the street from the ballpark, for treating me the way they have all season long.
Mm-hmm.
Without their love, without the local love, I wouldn't be able to keep this up with the Giants fan base.
Sure.
But Jared, look, you know where I've been coming from all season long. I think it's a great way to get this started, just to get a feel for where you think this thing is going to go here. An unbiased opinion about the matter. Because people as much as they might be interested in what I have to say, I think it's just complete and total bullshit at this point.
I got Giants remember, in four.
Dodgers in four.
Giants in four.
Giants in four.
Yeah. I think Logan Webb gets two wins in this series.
Giants in four. Who gets two wins?
I think Webb gets two wins in this series. Just go for the goddamn throat. The guy doesn't fucking lose.
I mean,
because if you've got like,
it's tough to watch this Dodger team just play this St. Louis Cardinal team the way they did, like as tightly of a contested ball game as that was. Because as hot as the
handle is,
I felt like that they, yeah,
just didn't happen. I mean, the Redbirds were 0 for 11 with runners in scoring position.
Exactly.
Like that game could have easily gone the other way.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. Very much so. Which is why.
You're tempted to pick the Giants, aren't you? You're in a position that I was in with the Brewers and Braves. You know what the right pick is, but you know what pick you have to make.
See, part of me doesn't want to make that pick because part of me, Jared, doesn't want to propel these motherfuckers to the World Series.
I mean, they're going, so might as well enjoy the ride.
Because it's like I at some point in time, because look, again, I don't want to, because I feel like if I pick the Dodgers, it feels like I'm gonna have to dance on the grave of the Giants if that happens. And there's good men in that clubhouse that I don't want to I don't want to bury.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think that they give a fuck at this point. I think that there's no pick that you could make at this point that would get you back in their good graces. Because then they're going to be like, yeah, okay, you're riding our coattails now. We've already been there, done that, won the division. Now you want to pick us? Fuck you.
No, that's why I said, you know, the regular season is for regular season banter, Jared. This is about the postseason.
This is about the postseason.
This is when the lights come on.
So I mean, do you have the fucking balls, Dallas? Do you have the balls to put your pride aside and select the San Francisco Giants in this best of five series against the Los Angeles Dodgers, the defending World Series champions who just won 106 fucking games? Riding the momentum of a walk-off homer in the NL wildcard game, that same Dodger team. That's the team that you got losing. Interesting pick.
Oh, man. I don't even want to do this right now. I don't want to make this pick.
You have to make the pick.
I don't want to make this pick.
Oh, you have to make the pick.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Make the pick. 30 seconds on the clock, Dallas.
Game one, we've got Logan Webb.
Yeah, you do.
Against
Walker Buehler.
Walker Buehler.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going Dodgers in four.
Wow.
Let's fucking go. Let's fucking go. Wow. Let's go. Logan Webb takes game one. The Dodgers, they've been there, Jared. They've been there. They know what it takes.
So do the Giants.
They know what it takes.
Mm-hmm. They do know what it takes. Okay.
They don't have their captain, Jared. They don't have their captain.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants are a ship without a rudder right now.
Is that true?
Brandon Belt, has left his fellow seamen aland.
I think they'll be all right with Buster Posey back there.
Well, Brandon Belt was never catching.
No. But you said captain.
Hey, he's the captain. Those aren't my words.
I would say Buster Posey, not a bad fallback there.
Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, I think leadership will be just fine. They've got enough bulletin board material to last a whole month of October.
I'm so scared.
You should be.
I don't want to pick the Dodgers at all.
You don't?
No. I want to pick the Giants in five.
We all had to make difficult picks here today, Dallas.
But I'm riding with the Dodgers in four.
In four is bold.
Because that's what my wallet says. That's what my wallet said about 10 minutes after first pitch last year. Or last pitch last year. Just know that there's a future riding in there too. All right?
Okay. All right. So that's that for the division series. The picks are in. We've got Dallas is riding with the Rays. I have the Red Sox. We both have the White Sox. I've got the Brewers. Dallas has the Braves. I've got the Giants. Dallas has the Doyers. There it is.
And I wouldn't mind going with the Astros over the White Sox either, but I just can't fucking do it. I don't want to do it.
Big time pussy picks for Dallas this year. It's tough.
Couldn't do it. All right. We'll see you next. We'll see you Friday.
Yeah, we'll see you Friday. Probably like late. Wait, so are we doing like late night Friday to drop Saturday?
Oh, no. No, we won't see you Friday.
Yeah, because we're going to want at least a couple. We're going to go on games one and two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see you when we see you. Be on the lookout. Look at your Spotify and iTunes this weekend because, you know, we'll figure it out. We'll be around.
Who knows?
Yeah. Enjoy the postseason baseball.
We don't.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save